Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Tuesday, October 19th. I'm Ray Graff. I have read that genealogy is the second most popular hobby in the country, right after gardening. And genealogy websites are the second most popular topic on the internet, according to what I've read. You can guess what the first one is. We're not doing a show on it. It has been years since we have tackled genealogy on this show, and it's always fun to do that. We have a genealogist with us to answer your questions. Tracy Scrabbit is an archives technician focusing on genealogy at the National Archives at Boston. So if you have been barking up that family tree of yours, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org. Genealogy and your calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Here to answer your genealogy questions today is Tracy Scrabbit. Tracy is an archives technician working at the National Archives at Boston. She holds a BA in art from the University of Hawaii, a master's in museum studies from the Johns Hopkins University, and a master of library science from Kent State University with a specialty in archives and special collections librarianship. Just a note here, Tracy is not appearing on this show as a representative of the National Archives or speaking in any official capacity. She is here to help you solve some of the mysteries of your family tree, if that's possible, or at least point you in the right direction. If you have a question, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Tracy Scrabbit, welcome to the show. You made it all the way from Boston.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me. I did make it.
It's great that you are here, and you made it in time for the show, so that's bonus points for you. By the way, in looking at your bio, I have rarely seen someone so qualified in so many things. You got art, you got museum science, you got library science. How did you end up where you are now?
How did I end up at the National Archives?
Yeah.
Well, I started out as an artist and ran out of funding, ended up as an art historian. Thought I would make my living working in museums, only to find that the job market is terrible, as it tends to be for so many fields now, and decided to go back to school for an MLS because there seemed to be more job openings. My last semester at Kent State, I was lucky enough to get an internship at the National Archives in Boston, and after about a year of volunteering there, a position opened up, and I just slotted right in there.
Are you enjoying looking into it? I know you focus on many things, but one of the things you do focus on is genealogy. Are you interested in that? Does it get you going?
You know, it's funny because I wasn't originally that interested in history outside of art history to begin with. So a lot of working at the archives was about sort of bringing myself up to speed. Like, do you need information on the art of South and Southeast Asia? I'm your girl. Do you need to know what the Coast Guard was doing in the 1800s? Not the girl. You know, so I had to come up to speed. And so a lot of what I learned and sort of got interested in genealogy was actually working with the researchers who would come in to our public access room, and they would, you know, they would have a question they couldn't answer, and, you know, I'm supposed to be the expert, and I wasn't the expert, but I was like, okay, let's learn about this together. And then, you know, I started to enjoy the mystery of trying to figure out, okay, how do I get this person the information? Does it exist? If it doesn't exist, what else can they do? So that's what I came to like about it, is the mystery of trying to figure out these questions that, you know, for a lot of people are just impossible to find. And of course, the records don't help at all, you know, because especially like, for example, with government records, the government is not like, if you have a passenger list, the government cares about, did the ship come into the port on that day?
Right.
You know, the fact that there's names on the list is secondary to that.
Right.
So a lot of times it takes genealogists or it takes companies like Ancestry or Family Search then going in and making those names available for people to research.
Very interesting. So. And, you know, you touched on a great point about the mystery. And I was trying to wrap my head around how genealogy and people who are so interested in their ancestry became, it's a popular thing in this country. And I think during the COVID, it became even more. People were inside and they said, well, the quest is the thing. I think that is really what this is all about.
Yeah. And I think also, especially with COVID, I think there's the idea of mortality, right?
Yeah.
You know, so many people are faced with this potential illness, the loss of, you know, people in their families or elderly people. And then they think to themselves, what happens if my grandfather dies and he knew all the history of the family and I don't know anything?
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, I want to tell my family about this person, you know, but I don't know anything about them, you know. So I think sometimes when, you know, that's something that we've noticed is it's really made people more aware of how fragile the knowledge of their families and them, you know, and their knowledge of themselves as people are. And I think that's what fuels them. You know, everyone wants to know where they came from, you know, even especially, you know, people of color, you know, African Americans, you know, they especially because their records are so, you know, few and far between,
right.
You know, and so, you know, you have a lot of people who just they want to answer that question, like, who am I? And where did I come from? And not everyone knows that. And I think, you know, a lot of people don't think about it until they start getting to an older age where now they have children they want to pass stories on to, or they, you know, they're getting older themselves and yeah. They want a record left behind just in case.
See, it wasn't a problem for my dad. He just made stuff up. And it really worked out very well. Nobody could tell the difference. The number to call here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you have a genealogy question for Tracy Scrabbit, and we got an email here, we'll start with this one. This one's from Joanne. Joanne wrote in before the show started, my maternal grandfather disappeared in the late 1920s. I have his date of birth, the date he arrived at Ellis Island from Gibraltar, and have traced him through Ancestry, an alien draft registration card in 1944 when he was working as a laborer at Faneuil Hall in Boston. I can't find a social security number or date and location of death for him. What else can I do to find out more about him, especially when and where he died, and if he had a second family?
Well, I think the first thing you can do is review the information that's on that alien registration card, that draft card, because it will have not only their employer information, but it will have their last known address or their address at the time of their registration. So what I would do is I would say, okay, they say he said he lived in Boston. Okay, can I check the Massachusetts State Archive for, does he have marriage records? Are they death records? What are the other towns around Boston that he might have, you know, that he might have lived in?
Yeah.
Can I check the death records, you know, for those towns? Can I check, you know, does he have, you know, does he have any children that you're aware of? You know, can you search for birth records for those? I think, you know, so those are all the things you can think about. If you can't find information about the person, think about any bit of information that you have about the life that they lived or the people that may have been around them. You know, like, do you know that he had a child? Maybe if you check the birth certificate, he might have passed on by the time the child was born. It would say
yeah.
deceased, or it would sometimes they'll ask where the father lived, you know. So it's all about trying to say, okay, this piece of information I don't know, but how can I expand on information that I have that's sort of secondary to the person? If he registered for the draft, did he serve? You could request his DD-214, which is discharge papers, from the VA or from the National Archives, the Record Center in St. Louis.
But they won't automatically give them to you, right? You have to show that you are a related?
No, actually, it really depends. Military records tend to fall under a 75 to 100-year privacy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's up for World War II right now.
Oh, yeah.
So once those records become public record, you just have to request them. If it was, say, you were looking for Vietnam War or Korean records, which are much more recent, yes, you would have to prove you were next of kin. But once records are public record and it's basically World War II back, you can request those just as a historian.
Interesting. Tracy Scrabbit joins us today. We talk genealogy on the program. We'll get to your calls in a moment. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It has been many years since we've done a genealogy Vox Pop, and we're doing it today. Tracy Scrabbit joins us, and let's go to the phones. Jen in Middletown. Jen, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
I have, for years, I've been wanting to do my family's genealogy, and I don't know where to start. When I Google genealogy or family history, so many sites pop up that I get so overwhelmed and I just stop. Where's the best place to start a genealogy project?
Okay. I'm not a sponsor. Not a sponsor.
Okay.
But I would recommend that you start at familysearch.org. They are a genealogy website. They have many of our records from Boston. They have many records from all over the country and all over the world. And it's a free site, so you don't have to pay a subscription.
Oh, that's good.
Exactly. They have census records. They have passenger lists. They have an amazing assortment of genealogy records. It's essentially a lot like Ancestry, which you may have heard of, but there's no charge for them. You just sign up for an account. So what I would suggest is start small, right? Pick one person that you want to research. Say, I'd like to research my grandmother. Think about her name. Did she have a nickname? Who was she married to? About when was she born? And try to see if you can discover information about one person to kind of teach yourself the process. And then decide on what it is that you're searching for. Do you want to find a birth certificate? Do you want to find, do you know that she came to the U.S.? Do you want to find naturalization records or passenger lists showing when she came in? Sometimes genealogy is such a massive subject that it can be really overwhelming. So the best way to start until you're more familiar is to say, okay, I want to nail down one piece of information about one person. Then I'm going to look for the next piece of information. And then eventually, once you learn the technique of doing the searching, it becomes easier to look for more people.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Jen, thank you very much for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. In the times that I have looked back at my family and tried to get information out of the census, it strikes me that the census was not always extraordinarily accurate, especially with people who came from Europe. Maybe there was a language barrier, but late 1800s, a lot of my father's side came from Germany into the early 1900s. There are discrepancies from census to census.
Absolutely. I think part of the problem is that there's no fact checking.
Yeah.
So if I'm an enumerator, and these enumerators were not trained. I mean, these were people that were hired every 10 years. They said, we need people to walk these streets.
Yeah.
So what they would do is the enumerator would go to the house, knock on the door. It didn't matter who answered the door. It didn't have to be the head of the house. It could be a child,
right.
Whoever answered the door, they would start asking questions. And so, they didn't fact check the information afterwards. So, if I walked up to your house and they said, who lives with you? They would say, Ray Grant well, that's not your name, but maybe the person who is at the door, that's what they think your name is, or
that's what my family thinks my name is.
You know? Exactly. So a lot of times you'll find that, you know, the enumerators also, a lot of times they wouldn't ask you, how do you spell the name? So sometimes it's phonetic spelling.
Yeah.
They weren't sure what the people's ages were, who was married, you know, who was family, you know, or their immigration status. That's a big one.
Yeah.
You know, but there's also problems where people would misreport. You know, if it's around, say, World War One, and you're Italian, you might not want to say that you're an alien. And of course, the enumerator is just going to write down
whatever you say.
You know, and sometimes people did it knowingly. Sometimes they weren't sure. You know, if they were midway through the naturalization process, sometimes they didn't understand the process properly. And, you know, they would say, oh, I did this one step. That's all I have to do. I'm a citizen, because they didn't understand they have to go back and finish it off. So sometimes it was honest mistakes. Sometimes it was misreported. Sometimes, you know.
It could be maddening, though,
exactly.
If you're looking into that and trying to dig through the various layers and finding out what is true. Tracy Scrabbit joins us today. It's Genealogy on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551, the number. Barb is in Saratoga. Barb, you're on.
Thanks, Ray, and thank you, Tracy. Starting to work just recently with Ancestry and looking at my father-in-law, we know a lot of information about him, but what we find is curious is that his middle name changed when he was drafted for World War II, or when he joined the Army. So his Army records forward have a different middle name from the first records and all the records like the census and everything before that. Is that common to people to make minor changes in their names and not, was that common back then? That would have been, you know, in the 40s.
Yeah, I mean, it really was. I mean, we see that a lot with people who, I do a lot of work with Italian dual citizenship. People will find that you'll find that someone comes to the United States as Giuseppe, decides that that's kind of too difficult a name for Americans, so they just decide to start calling themselves Joseph. And there's no, it's not like today where you have to go into court and request that your name is changed. People would just change their names. You know, and so you do find that a lot in the early records. Occasionally in the naturalization records, people will formally request a name change. But a lot of times people would just, they would just start calling themselves a different name, and then that would become their name.
Mm.
What I would say is look at his records. You know, is the original name something that he Anglicanized to make easier for people to?
No.
Yeah.
He had a very English name. He was born in Pennsylvania, so he wasn't an immigrant himself. His parents weren't immigrants. And his middle name on his birth record is Francis, and his middle name, you know, from his date of, you know, Army service forward, was Edward. So
is it possible that his name was Francis Edward? I mean, I have two middle names, and I only use one of them.
That's true. I suppose that, yeah. Would that not have been on his birth certificate, both middle names, though?
Well, it was on mine, but I wasn't born here. So I'm honestly not sure. Or it could be something, you know, is it a, you know, like if he was a Catholic, it could be a confirmation name.
And you know? He was, yes.
Yeah.
That's the only other thing.
Yeah,
I just wanted to know if it was a common thing.
Oh yeah, it really was quite common. But I would also say verify that is actually the service record. Because you know the problem is, you know, you think that the name of a person that you know is, you know, it is unique, but what you tend to find, especially in the 1800s, the early 1900s, is that there were a lot of common names. And so, I have done requests for census records for a husband and wife and found six families all with the same husband and wife,
amazing,
living in the same town.
Wow.
You know, so sometimes, you know, we think our names are unique, you know, like my husband's name is Alex. Apparently there's two Alexander Skravitz, both living in Boston, and one of them is not my husband. You know, but I thought, how many Alex Skravitz could there be? So that's always something to keep in mind. Like, even if you found the name and it mostly matches, it may just be a coincidence that someone else, you know, has the same name. So I would say absolutely verify. If you have the military record, it should have the parents listed. It should have the date of birth. Make sure that the genealogical information matches the name that you're looking at.
Barb, thanks a lot for the call. It's Genealogy Today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Tracy Skravitz came all the way from Boston for this program, and for that we are very grateful. Let's go to line 4, Pat in Albany. Pat, you're on.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I'm calling about my grandfather. He was an iron maker and worked for a company in Albany back in the early 1900s. And there's a family story saying that he was recruited to go out west, I think into Ohio, to make tanks during World War I. And I'm trying to find any kind of records that would show that. Do you know if there's any kind of military records or records that would show that he actually went and worked for the government to do this?
Yeah. So what I would suggest is to contact, if you go to archives.gov, which is our website, there is, as our office, you can do a search on the Visit Us website. You want the St. Louis Civilian Personnel Records Center. All of our military records, post World War I, and all of our civilian employee records are all consolidated in St. Louis. So you can conduct a search with them, give them all the information that you have, and they will be able to search the records to see if he was ever employed with the government, and then you can request his work record. The other thing I would suggest is, if you know the name of the company where he was working at this time, you can do a search. Does the company still exist? If the company doesn't still exist, are there records at an archive somewhere? You might want to call, like, I don't know if Albany has a city archive, but you can check if they have a city archive, or you can check with the New York State Archive to see if they keep records of when businesses were functioning, and you can check to see if an archive exists for that company if they have personnel records.
All right, Pat, thank you very much for the call. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Tracy Skravitz today, we go to our friend Joan in Schenectady. Hello, Joan.
Hello, Ray. Greetings. And I really do appreciate all the work with the. I just want to say my mom would have loved you. She was an archivist to her heart. And I do believe it might be genetic because I got the same gene. I was questioning like the primacy of records, of information. I don't use computers on purpose. But my family has some stuff like in my own lifetime, I have some information from cousins of my parents, and we've traced genealogy back as an amateur record keeping in my family. Some of the names back to the 1700s in France, some of the names, the Morse family name, direct linealogy to like 1692. Is that kind of printed on paper information from like generation to generation considered like a primary genealogy document?
Yes. So any record that is generated by the family would be considered a primary record. You see a lot of that in like genealogy historical societies, there are a lot of those societies who, when the person passes on, they will donate their family's records, or sometimes members of the family will write books recounting the history of their families. And so, they are very important sources. I'm not saying that you have to use the internet or computers, that's fine. But what I would suggest is, if you prefer to have paper copies, look into preserving them well, and keeping them well organized. But I think they are very important because, you know, or even have, you know, if you have like a relative who, you know, can just even use their phone and just photograph, you know, make photographic copies of the, you know, of the records. But it's absolutely, they're absolutely valuable and worthwhile and worth preserving.
Joan, thanks a lot for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Tracy Scrabbitt joins us today to answer your genealogy questions. Having fun so far?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, let's go to line something or other. Jim in Clifton Park. Jim, you're on.
Hi. The reason I'm calling is I have I think it's the 1900 census, and my grandfather is listed there, but I don't understand. Next to saying that he's his son, it looks like an NS and then P or something next to it, son. And also on that census, the wife said that she has two living children, and there's three children in the house. So I'm wondering if my grandfather was from another woman at some point, or it's kind of hard to read what the thing is there. In addition, the wife of my great-grandfather was from Germany, and in another census, she had my great-grandfather being born in Germany, which he wasn't. He was born in the U.S., so... You know, I realize that the census records aren't always correct, like you had previously mentioned, but I have no idea what this means.
Well, without seeing the record, I wouldn't be able to try to translate because I'd need to see what all of the columns are.
But this is under relationship of each person to the head of the family.
Yeah.
And then my great-grandfather is listed there, and his wife, who was born in Germany, and then Charles was my grandfather. I know you don't have the document there, so
what I would suggest is another website for you, and this is it's through the National Archives, but most of it is genealogists and researchers helping each other with some assistance from staff. It's History Hub.
Ah, History Hub.
Yep.
Not heard of that one.
Yep, History Hub. We've been really ramping that up during the pandemic. So
mostly for genealogists?
Yeah, it covers any kind of record that you can think of. We have a lot of genealogy. We have military records. We have African-American records, Native American, you know, court records. Basically, any kind of record that you can think of that the government produces or has produced or will ever produce.
Yeah.
There's a form for it there. So,
very cool.
Yep, and it's history. It's called History Hub. And so what I've seen people who have questions just like what you're saying, and they will post a picture of the document and say, hey, can anyone help me interpret this? Or I can't read exactly what this is supposed to be saying. Mm-hmm. Can you help me? And someone will be able to look at it and try to help you out.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, Jim, thanks for the call. Are genealogists helpful sorts, or will they look down snobbily at us who we have no idea what we're doing?
Oh, for the most part, the more people a genealogist can get interested in genealogy, the happier they are.
Fair enough. Tracy Scrabbitt joins us today. The home stretch is ahead. It's 800-348-2551 if you have a question, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. We'll hit the email bag in a moment. Booker T and the MGs here on Vox Pop. It's 800-348-2551. And Tracy Scrabbitt joins us today with a talk about genealogy. Before we get to the email bag, You know, on my mom's side, as so many people will tell you, we could trace it back to the Mayflower. How many thousands or millions of people in America are descended from people on the Mayflower?
I think I actually saw a history program about that once. I think it's something between like 3 and 4.5 million people.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we're not that special after all, but we knew that. Actually, one of our emailers, and it's a really long email, but he makes a point. If we go back far enough, most people are probably related, right?
Yes, absolutely. You know, so it's, you know, you hear about, oh, you know, this person, you know, is descended from the original Prince of Wales. Well, he lived 500 years ago. That's a lot of generations. There are probably millions of people who are related to some figure of royalty. Charlemagne is the other big one.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but I mean, and he was even, what, 1,000 years ago?
Yeah.
So you're talking 40, 50 million people all related to him eventually.
So cool. Yeah. Tracy Scrabbit joins us, 800-348-2551. All right, a couple of emails here, and then we'll hit the phones again. This one is from Florence. I have verified information for my family and my husband's and have started to put that information on a family tree on Ancestry.com. I found so much incorrect information on other trees. How do I handle that? I can't contact everybody, but once one bit of information is skewed and others use that information, it all becomes fiction. What to do? Do I just make sure my information is correct and ignore the rest?
I think that's really all that you can do, unless you want to contact that other person. Every time that you find an incorrect piece of information, all that you can do is make your tree as accurate as it can be.
This one is from Elise. I have information from when family members came to the U.S. and after. How would I search for information on them before they came to the U.S.? They were in the Mediterranean area and Eastern Europe.
Okay. I think what I would do is the same way that you would research information here. You would say, okay, I'd like passenger lists coming into the United States. You can think about, okay, I think they may have come from Greece. Okay, well, Greece has a national archive. Do they have passenger lists of people leaving the country? You know, that's something to think about. You know, where did the person come from? But you can do the same kind of thing. The same way that you can search for vital records here, you can search for vital records at foreign archives. Sometimes that can be a little bit more difficult if they're not translated into English or if you don't understand the language. But it's really thinking about where did they come from, but I want the same information. I know they were born in Frankfurt. Okay, where do I get birth certificates from Frankfurt?
Right.
So.
Okay, back to the phones in a moment, but just indulge my paranoia for just a moment. If I go to one of these sites and I start building my tree, am I putting my personal privacy at risk?
No, actually, because most websites, for example, like Ancestry or Family Search, they will not print personal information for usually about 75 to 50 years.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, I have a tree on Ancestry, and even when I look at my own tree, it doesn't say what my date of birth is.
Ah.
Because it's too recent.
Oh, very good.
You know, so I can see my, you know, I can see my grandparents because they've both passed. I can't see my parents because they're still alive.
That's interesting.
I can see their names, you know, so. But I think also you can choose whether you want to make your tree public or private.
Interesting.
So if you don't make it a public tree that other people can look at, no one can access that information. But the genealogy sites are actually, they're really good about trying to protect personal privacy, whether it's information from a public record or not.
Hmm.
They're very concerned with, you know, people being able to access information from the still living, as we will call ourselves.
Well, speak for yourself. All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. We go to Anitra in Cragsmore. Anitra, you're on.
Hi, thank you. My parents did a tremendous amount of genealogical research, and they made a lot of cross-country trips. And, you know, doing research in the courthouse was a part of it. You know, they did trips to England. And I basically have a huge amount of boxes with information, you know, both the results of the work that they did and process related files like emails and letters they exchanged with other people. I have pictures of them standing by gravestones on, you know, genealogical trips. I have family photos with people identified. I have artifacts like shoes and shawls and skirts that belonged to my great grandmother and so on. And it's all sitting in my living room and, you know, a lot of boxes because everybody else was like, no, we're not interested. And I was like, you know, we can't just like junk this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, so I, you know, my fantasy is like, I'm going to go through this and I'm going to, you know, make sure all this information's on ancestry.com and so that the fruits of their work is preserved. So, but it's been several years and the boxes are still sitting there. It's kind of overwhelming. And also, I'm not sure, like, what do I need to keep? I mean, photos, obviously, but like these supporting emails that they did with other people who were doing genealogical research. I'm like, do I need to save that? I don't know. So if you have any advice about, you know, what's important to digitize and what can be tossed, I would appreciate it. And if people are ever interested, like I don't have kids, but maybe some people in Michigan who have the same great grandmother I do would be interested in some of these artifacts. And
Yeah.
I think definitely the photographs. And I think any of the information that gives you the final leads. Like, do you need all 20 of the emails? Or do you need that 21st email where your parents finally got the information they were looking for? You know, so I would look at it like that. Like, do I want the final answer or do I just want, do I want to see how they got there? So those are the things I would prioritize, scanning or photographing or digitizing if you can. But in terms of the artifacts and the collection as a whole, like you were saying, there might be people who are related to you or related to the families that your parents interacted with. So I would say, is there a historical society in the town where they live that might be interested in the collection? If your parents were of a certain ethnicity, like say they were Italian or Irish or whatever, is there a cultural center or, you know, like, you know, we have a lot of Irish American and Italian American sort of genealogy clubs in New England and especially in Boston, and see if they are interested in the histories of the families. You know, the other thing that you can think about is sort of outsourcing the scanning. Do you have a university in your area that has a library program? You could say to them, hey, or like as an archivist, I have to know how to organize records, right? So say, hey, I have this collection. You know, I need to have it organized and cataloged. Would your class be willing to use this as their sample collection?
Oh my God,
that seems to have struck a note.
They're more like the Mayflowers. I mean, my mom got her Mayflower, you know, connection, and so they're more of that, you know, and going back to the 16th century and.
Yeah.
Mom was always like, I want to get back to the Magna Carta, but she didn't manage that.
It might get tougher and tougher to do that.
That's a brilliant idea, outsourcing the scanning and like trying to find, like, what department would I contact?
See if there's, I would say, like a library science department or a public history department. Those would be two, or if they have an archive-specific program.
The only problem, Anitra, what if the college kids aren't that bright and they screw the whole thing up?
Well, then they don't get a good grade in their class. They're not going to screw it up.
All right, well, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We go to lovely Feuerbusch. Suzanne, you're on.
Yes. Hi, Ray and
Tracy,
and thank you. Tracy, right?
Right.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much for taking my call. Yes. So I have 25 letters that are from my grandparents'
and beyond, going back further, their parents from Poland. And there are 25 of them. There are a couple of them that are over 100 years old. And I've been trying for the last 5 years to find someone to translate. I know there is a program at UMass Amherst that does translation, but it's very expensive for 25 letters. So I'm looking for some other ideas. I've joined some Polish organizations, one in Connecticut and one in Massachusetts, and they're very limited with what they can do for translation. So I'm looking for some other ideas. I had one idea of, you know, looking for these centers that are English as a second language centers that might, somebody there might know someone who speaks Polish, who's somebody's grandmother, who would like to, you know, somebody that knows the old Polish.
Yeah.
And could sit down and just translate these letters, just not typed up, just write it in English for me.
Well, I think you could also think about, is there like a local community college where kids are studying languages? That is anyone there studying Polish? You could.
I doubt it.
You know,
Polish
but,
is, I mean.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know.
I know, even my husband doesn't speak Polish anymore. but another thing to think about is, are there any Polish American clubs in your area? Or can you scan the, you know, scan or photograph the things and contact them and say, hey, do you have a, you know, do you have like a job board or do you have anyone who would be interested in helping me? So that might be something to do. That might be one suggestion.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But
there are
again,
a couple of those around.
Yeah. So, yes. But I think for sure with the student, the thing about the nice thing with the students is you can kind of shop it around, right? As long as you have the good photographs of the letters, the school doesn't have to be close to you. Yeah. So
I have them all copied, but I don't know about any place that's even. The languages are being discontinued. Even French and Spanish are not as popular. So Polish is not going to be in the mix.
Well, why don't you find an old Polish lady and say, hey, read these for me.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm trying to do. So
there's got to be a few around. My mother-in-law sadly has passed, or she would have helped you out there. But I'm sorry about that, Suzanne, but thank you for the call. By the way, just two quick emails that I think are important for this conversation, and then we'll jump back and catch a couple more calls. This one's from Robin. Robin said, I was told it's harder to trace from the mother than the father. Is this true? My mom is of Native American descent, and I would love to trace our history to find out the tribe and nation. That's a sticky wicket.
Yep. I think, unfortunately, Native American genealogy is not one of my fortes.
Yeah.
But my feeling is that it really depends on where they were living and how the people in that area viewed the parents. So, as this is not Native American,
right.
But for example, with African Americans, you know, bloodline was always through the mother. So if the mother was a slave, the child was a slave. It didn't matter if the father wasn't. You know, so I don't know. So it's very matrilineal
right.
in that sense. I don't know. Native Americans, you know, there's so many. So I don't know if the particular tribe is matrilineal. Because the thing, or if it was, you know, or if it's patrilineal, like I would say, I would tend to think that it's more matrilineal because you can always tell who someone's mother is. You don't always know who
right.
the father is. But is the father recorded because they're the one that has power? So
right.
what I would suggest doing is, if you know the area that they come from, research which Native American tribes have lands in that area and see if you can do a little bit of research with their most tribes today will have a tribal council that you can contact. A lot of them have tribal archives that you can contact and you can kind of ask them, you know, I think that she may have been a member of this tribe? How can I find that out? What kind of information do I need to give you?
So this would really require a little extra detective work.
Then. Yes, it really would.
All right, one more email here. We only have about 2 minutes, but I want to throw this your way for a quick answer from Deborah. Some censors and death records use codes that are not deciphered on the dock. Where would I find those decoded?
So you should be able to go to the U.S. Census Bureau. They have a historian's office, and you can actually, if you go to the website for the U.S. Census, there's a link to their historian's office, and you can look at their enumeration.
There's a key.
Okay. Yep, there's a key for all of the questions and what all of the codes mean.
All right, very quickly, we only have about 90 seconds with Tracy Scrabbit. Mike, oh no, I'm sorry, that's the wrong one. Now, Mike has been waiting. I got everybody on here. Hang on a minute here. All right, let's try. Oh my God!
Hello.
I've screwed everything up. I apologize to everyone.
Am I here?
you're there, but I'm all right.
It's
that's
Marta.
It. I'm sorry. We had some issues here. Let's try. I did this. Zach, the engineer, did not do this. Well, Tracy, we've ended on a low note, and that was all my fault. I hit several buttons at the same time because, frankly, I have fat fingers, and that's the way it rolls. We had so many callers. I hope you come back to us.
Now, I'd love to come back.
It's a long ride from Boston.
Oh, that's all right.
Maybe we'll do it like early 2022 if the world doesn't end. What do you think?
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
That was a lot of fun. Meantime, so... The free website, if people want to search stuff?
So the free website is familysearch.org.
Right.
And the website for the forum for all kinds of records and people helping each other out is History Hub.
Okay, History Hub.
I'm a terrible government employee because I do not remember if it's historyhub.org or historyhub.com. But if you just search for History Hub, it is, you know, it's a crowdsourced genealogy site that is run by NARA, and we have NARA employees who assist and also citizen archivists who assist there.
I think you're a wonderful government employee. You've been one of the most pleasant ones I've ever dealt with in my entire life. Well, Tracy Scrabbit, thanks for being here. We appreciate it very much. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Absolutely.
Support comes from the Albany Pine Bush Preserve, now accepting submissions from the Carner Kids Film Festival, featuring short movies about the Pine Bush by filmmakers between the ages of 10 and 17. AlbanyPineBush.org. Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales service and installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators, serving the Greater Capital District for over 40 years. AmbroseLEC.com. Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts. Locally sourced comfort food, wine, and cocktails, offering socially distant dining indoors and out Thursday through Sunday from 4 to 9 p.m. ChesterCommonTable.com. And Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume, and cover letter writing, accepting new clients, CareersInTransitionLLC.com. Once again, thanks to Tracy Scrabbit for joining us. Thank you for listening. Apologies to the 17 people that I put on the air at the same time. Yes, it's one of those days. Tomorrow we'll talk with Gene Gagnon about travel. That's at 2 p.m. Stand by now for the book show if something else doesn't happen.